Hello there. Welcome to this show. I am your host, Conrad Brogues. This show is called Architects of Liberty, and we're just going to skip all the introduction, all that. You know who we are. You know who I am. You know who Vinny is. Let me introduce my guest, the great Vinny Eastwood. Vinny, what's up, man?
Well, you know, certainly not my mood. It's been, a long, slow paint drying process going through the court system after I was arrested a couple of years ago, 2 years ago-ish, for protesting the lockdown and all of those other measures that everybody knew didn't work, except everybody else. And so nowadays I'm just kind of feeling the long, slow drag of it, and it's quite miserable, frankly. And exhausted.
Yeah, I'm very happy you're here, but I'm not happy about the fact that your situation with your wrongful arrest, conviction, sentencing, not to mention the financial assault and the psychological assault on you, that's still continuing. You know?
Yeah, it's long-term psychological warfare for old Vinny this time. Thank you very much, New Zealand.
Yeah, and you know, that's what I wanted to talk about with the whole concept of the architect. That's why I wanted to talk about the architect. I would have told you before, but I figured, what's the fun in that? I'll tell you live on the air. So think of this as a sales pitch, right? The whole idea. I know you were in sales. You did you did well in that. So let me know how I do, and it has to do exactly with this ongoing court case that you have, right? I was thinking, well, these things aren't happening to us. Obviously, it's happening to you. You're having these things done to you because of peacefully protesting. But we who are watching, you know, we don't have to see this as an injustice and all of this. We need to be like an architect. And what does an architect have? First of all, he has a plan. And we need to have a plan, the people who are supporting you, who are watching you, right? For example, your appeal is continuing. You're out on bail, as you say right now. When you go back in the court, you know, what are we going to do in case it does go wrong? You know, where's the support here? You know, that we need to have a plan. We need to attack this thing, not just watch and wait, you know, and just keep watching and waiting and seeing what happens, wondering if Vinny's going to be here next week. And I think the reason that it keeps getting delayed and delayed is because maybe there was a little bit of attraction, and they're hoping that any kind of support you might have had dies down, and you know, they'll wait 6 weeks and 6 weeks and 6 weeks, and you keep paying more money, and you know,
it's just like you have a possibility where if I go to prison, they're handing me an army, as D. Conspiracy would say, and I think that basically the fact that we got arrested gives us a lot of kudos, a lot of credence, not only in just in New Zealand, but around the world, because the world was oppressed under these measures. And unlike many of the people who have been persecuted by the state as a result of breaking these pandemic laws, we had an audience, Billy TK and ourselves. You know, we had a platform, we had a profile. And so we're able to get support from people all around the world. But there's others, like people in Canada, I think, have been in prison for like 500 days awaiting their trial, you know. And this is just the second year of us being out on bail. So we don't suffer quite equitably. However, we're still the products of a landmark case. And it is a question in law of whether or not New Zealanders actually have any rights, or if the government can just pass laws that says that you don't. And it's also setting a precedent of whether or not somebody can be jailed for peacefully protesting, right? No public property was damaged. Nobody was hurt, apart from those people who got choked and roughed up by the police. But of course, no charges have been laid. I wonder if we should all be laying complaints and things of that nature. Wouldn't it be great if you could do that? If you knew who they were and that sort of thing. But yeah, these things just happen so fast and then you're just left with the aftermath. And it's representative, I think, in the entire Western world of what's happening to our countries. That peaceful protest, freedom of speech, these things are under attack. You know, all-out assault, all-out war has basically been declared on the minds and the hearts of people everywhere. And to be at the forefront of that is a terrible privilege.
And you said it yourself right there. It's all-out war. And I asked the question, you know, if the New Zealand government does come out and lock you up, is that not basically declaring that they are a totalitarian regime? They are no longer a Western government that they claim to be. They are a Soviet-style regime, and you have said exactly this. And I say that you shouldn't just, next time you go there, you shouldn't just walk out of there with your freedom. You should walk out of there with an apology, at the very least. No, this is ridiculous. It's not just about, is Vinny going to go to jail or not? It's like, well, are you going to pay him back financial restitution? And how can you even quantify the psychological damage there? Because as you say, you're not a crook. You're not a scammer. It's none of that. It's peaceful protest done for the health and enlightenment of people, for their own, for the things that the New Zealand government has not been securing properly. That's what you were doing. And it's about, okay, are they going to at least pay you? Are they going to at least say sorry? Are they going to do the right thing? Well, my guess is no, no, and no. But still, see, this is what we need to be thinking about.
Yeah. There's a little document that I have on my computer on just such an occasion. And I hope that it's possible to get the government to pay out and things of that nature, enormous compensation fees for the trauma I've suffered and the difficulty I'm actually going to have going forward in life. You know, there already were, before my arrest, things that I couldn't do that ordinary people can do every day. You know, you can get up and you can go to a job that doesn't really particularly matter about the grand center of humanity, where you can have to follow orders in order to collect a paycheck. Other people can do that. I couldn't. And this is the reason why I've become an activist and a media personality, because I recognize the fact that there's a lot of unlistened to people out there. There's a lot of people who've seen things that they think about a lot, that they've researched and they've experienced, that a lot of people don't really want to listen to them. And those people are, I think, very important, because the reason why the vast majority of people don't want to listen to them is because they're telling them something that's true. Usually things that are true are scary. This is where we get the term controversial. It means that it's a piece of information where, upon hearing it, you are forced to make a choice of whether or not you make your life different now because of the information you've received. That's controversy. And I believe that people are persecuted and have been since the dawn of mankind, really, for speaking their mind, for doing what they think is right, for not necessarily harming or hurting anybody, just having a completely different belief to the vast majority of people, and the ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbaggery in charge.
Yeah, and those people that nobody wants to listen to, I consider myself one of those people, and there are many of those people. And my message to those people is, well, we got to see ourselves in kind of a different light. You know, this freedom thing, it's not just like a protest or a march or just like a collective that we just have to put our fists in the air and then go. And somebody like Vinny is going to take us there. Each one of us has to become like a hero and a specialist. You know, we really got to approach this thing like an architect. You're one of these people. You're one of those architects of liberty, because you actually put it all together. Whereas these people like me, these other people who want to do something good, it seems like everybody's sitting there with their saw and their hammer. Everybody's in a different room and everybody's doing a different job. And how is the job ever going to get done that way? Mm. Who's bringing them all together? You know?
Yeah. I was talking to somebody the other day about the truth movement in New Zealand, and the truth movement in New Zealand didn't really exist until maybe 2020. Maybe started up in 2019, but I'd been going at it since 2008. And there were so many hundreds and thousands of people that I'd interviewed on my show. I was doing 2 days a week, 5 hours a day. 2 hours a day, 5 days a week, rather, on American Freedom Radio for years. And when you add that up, that's thousands and thousands of hours of interview time. And I mostly, or at least partly, gave that to the people in New Zealand who were talking about this issue over here, 1080, or that issue over there, fluoride, or this issue over here, the government surveillance programs, and this area over here, the government kidnapping children, and so on and so forth, to the point where only me and the people who religiously listen to my show had any real idea of what was going on in New Zealand and how bad it really was in every single minute little sector that people had gotten, upset, or let's just say a government agency had drawn the ire of an individual in this country. It pissed them off enough that they decided that they were going to do something about it, and that they weren't going to stop until something had stopped or begun. That's what the people on my show basically represent. Those kind of people who won't stand down because they know that there's nobody else to do the job but them, especially in a small country like this. And it wasn't just them that I had on my show. It was people like that from all over the world. So getting this overview perspective of how screwed up everything really is and how simple the solutions really are puts you into a completely different category than the vast majority of people in terms of the way in which they think. It's I guess the term for it, one person told me, is a meta-understanding, right? So that you are understanding so many different things simultaneously and the feedbacks therein. So this way you can have an idea and you can express it, and that idea can be solid regardless of which way it's attacked. And that's what a lot of the people on my shows really do, I think, at the end of the day, is that they do what I call the real work. Reading government documents, making those documentaries, and so on and so forth. I'm just a talk radio show host. A lot of the time I don't actually know who it is that I'm interviewing, just a guest or a flag on or something like that. And this is how you have a really good conversation with somebody. If you don't really know who they are and you're simply open to finding out, you'll be unsurprised at how willing people are to let you get to know them. I haven't paid for a single person to be on that show, and there's all these freaking amazing thinkers of our time, right? And they're all but willing to give their time to dispense their knowledge. That's what they basically are here for. That's what they want to do. They want somebody to listen to them so that their knowledge can be passed on and doesn't just disappear when they die.
Isn't it so interesting? I was just thinking about this. You were talking about all the knowledge from all the different sectors. Imagine all this knowledge of all the different things that are going on, all the different aspects. And then the capstone on top of it is that knowledge of just talking to people, knowledge of personalities and, you know, emotions, just being able to get to know somebody. I feel like many of us are short on that, you know, and we get lost. We get lost like, you know, dying in our own foxholes. You know, there's that saying. To bring it all together, knowing how to talk to somebody, meet somebody, forming these deep connections, because we don't just have a system to destroy. We have a system to build too. We have to build and destroy at the same time. We're like construction workers that sleep on the job site. That's us.
This truth movements in New Zealand, I think, you ever heard of the 7 degrees of separation? That everything's connected. You might not know somebody who lives in South Africa who's a warlord, but you know somebody, that's the first degree, who knows somebody, that's the second degree, who knows somebody, who knows somebody, who knows somebody, who knows somebody, who knows that guy, right? 7 degrees of separation. That's the entire world. Everything is actually very knitted together in quite an interesting fabric, right? This is the metadata that the NSA looks for. Who you know, right? And in New Zealand, because it's so small, anybody who's broadcasting truth in this country has between a 1 and a 2 degree separation from me.
Right? At least.
I've been at the epicenter of this for longer than anybody else by a significant margin in terms of creating radio shows, doing YouTube videos, making memes, posting it up on social media, doing interviews and documentary formats, and making music and making short films and all of that kind of creative jam. So I'm a very multi-talented person, and there's a lot of things that I can contribute when people want to collaborate. And that's, I think, the whole spirit of freedom, I think, is people voluntarily collaborating and giving freely of themselves to create something together.
Yeah, you know, you could be the best architect in the world, but the ultimate struggle is finding the builders, the guys who actually want to build the damn thing that you came up. You have the vision in your mind, you have the tools and everything, but you still need the hands, you still need the minds that understand what it is we're trying to do here.
Yeah.
You need support, you know?
Hell yeah. And also, you need to be able to delegate, apparently. And it helps if you're not a terribly traumatized person, which unfortunately I am, you know. One of those things that other people can do is they can remain consistent, you know. I can't. I'm often a daze and a daydream a lot of the time. It's amazing I can get any work done at all. But that also allows me to be in the moment sometimes and come up with some really amazing stuff.
Isn't that amazing that, you know, you have that level of trauma and difficulties that most people don't understand, but look at your frequency to this day, years and years, a decade later, how much work you put out there. You still find a way to get on here? I mean, you say that's not consistent. Well, I don't know what consistent is then.
I mean, this is I can be consistent in, but when it comes to, you know, real life and people and friends and remembering people's birthdays and remembering what day the garbage goes out and all of that kind of stuff, I'm like in disarray sometimes. You know, I've been kind of in the radio game for so long that it's basically, it takes over your life, you know, because you have to spend a significant portion of your life either on the radio or just archiving what you've just done or organizing the next guest or something like that. And that's even when you're doing a small amount of radio. When you're doing a lot of it, like I was back in the day, it just sucked up a huge amount of time. It really was like a full-time job. Couldn't get a hold of me. I mean, I'm still very difficult to get a hold of a lot of the time. And man, just keeping up with the people who are wanting to keep up with me is just a challenge.
Yeah, and in all that, I think the family of a hero always goes unnoticed, and they're never really thanked as much as they should be. You know, the real family members that that do help you out the most, you know, while you're doing all this, you know, you got hands everywhere, and there's still somebody, you know, somebody who's supporting us, hopefully.
Yeah. Well, you can't do, you can't really do anything on your own fully in this world, really, can you? You know, you're always relying on somebody. And I think it behooves us all to show your appreciation for those people in your life, the people who do things for you and that kind of thing. Again, he gave them thanks and praise. And I think that what's difficult is that people look at the cause, all right, the cause of human freedom, the cause of human liberty, as though it's more important than the man next to you. This is a miscalculation, because the cause of freedom and human liberty is about the man next to you. Politics, religion, and all your ideas and things of that nature that you might hold sacred don't really matter at the end of the day when it comes to the cause of liberty and freedom and protecting the man to your left.
Yeah, I agree, because at the end of the day, freedom is personal. It's not in a book. It's personal. It's tied into love. You can't separate freedom from love. It is about the person next to you. Absolutely. It's their whole essence as an individual. And I know what you mean. You know, I've already noticed this in my life. Sometimes I'm just like, I'm so focused on the mission and the battle. It's like, well, wait a minute, I need to be here now. There's somebody that needs my attention, you know?
Yep, that's right. And that's the problem when you're fighting a war at home, you know? Oh. Because there's no escape from it for you, because as soon as you go home, you're going back to war. You know,
even the order followers don't have that problem.
Where's your relaxation time? Where's your holidays? Where's the week where you don't turn on the computer or the TV to watch anything truth related, and you can actually give your brain like a break from it? Because I remember when I started out, it was very stressful learning that we were all going to die and we were enslaved by criminals and sociopaths and psychopaths and probably reptilians or something like that. You know, it was like a little bit frightening. And, you know, and you kind of go a bit crazy as you do, because you're under threat. Shit, my God, what am I going to do? You know. They're not here, all right?
Yeah.
Not now. And they're not going to come through the door in the next 60 seconds and kill you, right? So all you had to do was just remember that whatever information you're absorbing, if it isn't going to kill you in the next 60 seconds, you don't have to necessarily have a whole boatload of anxiety about it. Why is that important? Because all of these things can potentially plant little seeds in your mind, cause you to worry and get stressed out, and then you're in a fight or flight phase in your brain. You're not thinking with your primate cortex that does all your logic and your rationale. It's once you're calm and you're chilled out and you're like, okay, I'm calm, I'm chilled out, and satanic pedophiles are running the world. All right, this is the Zen master at work.
But you know, when you're in that reptilian fight or flight mode, not only are you not thinking, but in my view, you're not really feeling. That's not real feeling. That scared feeling, that's not a real feeling. That's not real care. You know, that's not the ability really to feel empathy for the person next to you. That's just like, you know, that's why they need us in fight or flight, because that's when we get the most selfish and we do things that aren't good for ourselves at all, especially in the long term. So it's not only thinking. I'm all about thinking. And then it's the care. I'm trying to take back to the care. all the time, you know. These are both higher faculties, you know, the masculine and the feminine. And it just seems like we're all stuck in this, like, boyish, you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's voyeurism, I think. We watch people doing things through screens, and we live through them rather than living our own lives. And we can do this for many hours a day, voyeuristically taking a trip on somebody else's consciousness stream. And very rarely do we sit and we just analyze our own consciousness stream and have a look around us and analyze what we are actually doing with our time.
Yeah. And, you know, getting caught in these flows, in these streams, we need to put that out there for other people so they could get caught in the consciousness stream that takes them in the right direction, in the direction where they could reconnect with themselves and with nature, you know. By the way, speaking of nature, shout out, you know, Corey, DK in the chat, Debbie, thanks everybody for, you know, I'm monitoring the chat over here. I appreciate all you guys. But yeah, I just wanted to say, you know, we really got to reach out and we should be inspiring. And it's hard to be inspiring when you're fighting in a war, right? You're like, oh, I want to be on that guy. That's not what people think.
Yeah. It's always the guy who rides in the last days of the battle or something like that. He's real fresh and stuff like that. And he's like, come on, everybody. And everybody's just been like listening to cannon fire for 3 months and solid into the night. And then, oh, bro. All right. He said pretty inspiring. All right. Let's go, guys.
Yeah, what about the guy that was there first? He was on the first day. He's still laying there.
Yeah.
Everybody's celebrating the victory and the guys over here still fighting.
Yeah. Just thanks everybody. Yeah, just drink up. You did well.
It's cruel, right? Like, it's funny, but it's cruel. What actually, is going on?
Actually, it happened to me one time in high school. I was the head of the prom committee and I came up with the playlist. It was like a really epic freaking playlist for the thing, and then of course they scrapped it at the last minute and just played freaking hip-hop, which pissed me off. And it was the most successful prom the school had actually ever had, and we had shitloads of decorations and stuff like that. It was the snowball, you know, and all sorts of things and icing stuff everywhere. And it was so good that the next Monday at school, when you had the school assembly, the principal read out the names of everybody who helped out with the prom, including my mate Rowan, who helped to disassemble some polystyrene for about 5 minutes and then gave up and then left. Read out all their names except mine.
No. Wow.
You know, that stuff kind of sticks with you, man. Authority. I don't like it.
The villain's origin story. I was prom committee and went unappreciated, so I went and fought the scumbaggery for 15 years. I never got away with it.
I know. Probably got busted with selling weed and then got fired from writing a 7-page essay what was wrong with the company, and then started listening to Alex Jones and Bill Hicks, you know, just kind of like the perfect combination of elements can sometimes make a even a inert piece of matter freaking explode.
Even a salesman, I guess. But that's, you know, that's an inspiring story, you know. I like your story. You got the spirit of the people in you, and you had it in there from selling weed. That's the spirit of the people. You find out about the spirit of the people that way, talking to people every day.
Yeah, weed brings people together.
Yeah.
You know, it does. And if you don't think so, just imagine you're at a party and suddenly you smell some weed. What's going to happen? You're going to go over there, aren't you? Right? It happens, man. And I'm just looking at my J-Day poster from 2019, Saturday, May the 4th. May the 4th be with you, International Star Wars Day. And J-Day is a... I think you might have a variant of them in Canada and the States and stuff like that, where people go to a public place and smoke a shockingly large amount of weed, even when it's illegal, just to protest the fact that it's illegal, right? That's what we call J-Day here in New Zealand. And as you were talking before about, you know, being arrested for peaceful protest, I was just noticing on this poster across from me that it said family-friendly peaceful protest. And I was like, you know, there's a lot of synchronicity and a lot of backlash and stuff like that that happens. I've got another T-shirt on my wall here sent to me by an American listener, I think in 2010, and it says, when the people fear their government, there is tyranny. When the government fears the people, there is liberty. Thomas Jefferson. And you... look at the collections of your life, and you'd imagine if you had lived as a caveman and had survived through to today, how few knickknacks you'd really have from your entire life to really call your own, because it would just be too much. You'd have to discard things, wouldn't you? And you'd learn to travel light. And I think what happens to a lot of people, maybe including me, is that we become a lot of bit comfortable and surrounded with the familiar and your memories, your family and things of that nature, and you become a little bit less adventurous.
I mean, it's hard to travel light when you have a family and a baby to feed, right?
I mean, people did it, you know, and people can do it. If one man can do it, another can.
Yeah.
It's just about that fear sort of thing shutting you down. Instead of going, why not? You're going, oh, well, this is why not. And, you know, you make excuses for things. Now, it's all part of the rational mind, I think, is that you have an inspired moment to do something, but then you think about it and you decide not to do it because you might get yourself killed. You know, it's a perfectly reasonable deduction. No, I'm not going to do that in my car. You know, we do it all the time. We do it every day. But sometimes it works too well, and we prevent ourselves from getting into situations that have any risk, all right? And there's a principle called the dignity of risk. And what it says is, if you deprive people of their ability to take risks, you deprive them of their dignity in and of itself.
I just can't think of a better example than saying you got to put on a mask. That's exactly it. That's just that act in itself, not even talking about anything else. Saying you can't leave your house. They're saying that that's a risk, that they're depriving you of taking it. It's a so-called risk. It's not even a real risk. And there we go. It's the complete stripping of a person's dignity. And then you go, you get locked up for it, you get arrested. And then it's like years later, and you know, you're free technically, but then you're trying to get the word out here. They're still weighing on you and your family. And it's just like, are these guys really going to win? Because it doesn't look good in general for the whole world, not just for you. You know,
yeah, I mean, I came out of the court and thought to myself, oh, thank goodness I'm still free. And then I went, wait, hold on, no, I'm not. I'm just still an open air prisoner, you know, same as everybody else. We live in a global open air prison.
I never heard of no conditions like that. Like, they actually didn't allow you to access the internet, like. Like, you know, they
Yeah, six weeks. We had to go into court like four times, including the High Court, to get that overturned. The police opposed us having the internet restriction overturned because they were concerned that it wouldn't curb our ability to spread anti-lockdown sentiment. That's a quote.
If you're breathing, that won't curb your identity, your ability to do that. You know, like, this is about telling the truth. So what are they going to say? If you're breathing, you know, this is basically the laying down the steps to concentration camp and execution. It's really that in an English-speaking country in 2023. That's wild.
Yeah, it's pretty hardcore, man. And that's why the case is really so important, is because, as I told Billy, you know, he said, Vinny, do you think we're going to get arrested? And I was like, yep. And he's like, well, why are we doing it then? And you go, well, there's an old saying, Billy, how do you expose a fascist? By making them act like it. Okay? And so far, the government and the police have fallen right into our trap and have basically shown themselves up to be exactly what we knew they were, and except now it's all completely public and it's being exposed, and it wasn't being before. So it's that landmark kind of case. Everybody has to take a look at that big wall over there and just go under down it, and as Dr. Green used to say from the Legalized Cannabis Party, just go chip, chip, chip. Just everybody just start chipping away at it in your own little way, whatever you can do, whatever you're able to. I mean, Billy and I were able to do this. I mean, because we had the platform, we had the resources, we had people helping us and things like that. So, you know, we kind of had to, because there was really nobody else in a position to be able to do it. But, of course, now, since being banned from the internet and all of these other things that have happened to us, we're significantly struggling, especially with legal bills and stuff like that. I need, like, $6,000, I think, New Zealand dollars. I think it's about 4,500 American to pay off my lawyer's bills and researcher person who we got to dig up some old cases and things of that nature that helped with the precedent of our case. So, yeah, it's more debt than I've actually ever been in my life. And people say, $6,000? Oh, that's nothing. I've got, you know, but you're not an activist who's been living on the bones of his ass for nearly 20 years. Okay? You know, this debt is not something that you can get rid of easily in my position. And I think it's... I'm very grateful for the amount of support that I have been getting. Just being able to keep my head above water is absolutely fantastic.
Sure, but, you know, we're not getting any younger, right? So they're going to keep trying to hit you with costs, and just the cost of life, inevitably, just the fact that we're living in a world that's descending deeper into slavery, our health is all of our health is going to get worse. We're going to need more money just to get by, right? And they're going to keep throwing more and more legal fees. Even, you know, where even your support is, you know, like who donate to you. Well, that, you know, $5 a week or that $30 a month, that's worth less every month, you know? And this is what's happening. We're really up against it.
It's worth less every month, and it costs people more to send it to me every month as well, because of the inflating prices in their own lives, you know. So as the global squeeze goes on, it's basically like this. If you had no taxes of any kind, charity would be ubiquitous. Everybody would do it. They'd give money to the hospitals. They'd give money to the schools. They'd give money to that. They probably wouldn't give money to interest on foreign debt. They probably wouldn't give money to an endless, no end in sight illegal US conflicts. They probably wouldn't give a whole bunch of money for child kidnapping. They probably wouldn't give a whole bunch of money for various other chemtrailing activities and fluoridation and so on and so forth. But fortunately, we've got taxation. Well, but how does that work, Vinny? At the barrel of a gun. What are you talking about? I pay my taxes. I've never seen no barrel of a gun. Yeah, that's because you pay your taxes.
Always. Yep.
Okay, people literally getting IRS agents like with guns and stuff like that running into their restaurants and closing them down. Like, bro, this is just nuts. And the problem is that a lot of people, you know, when you're talking with a deeply religious person and you get the sense that this person's not only religious, they're actually clinically insane too. All right. It's not one or the other. It's both. And you proceed to try and exfiltrate your way from the conversation. But what's problematic here is that most people are infected with the madness and the religion of statism, or they're statinists, to be the point, as my mate Nick.
I haven't heard that one before.
it's quite fantastic, isn't it? My mate Nick came up with it. I'm gonna promote it. Thank you, Nick. You're the man. And that's a real problem. If somebody is delusional and they have a very strong belief in that delusion, how do you persuade them of this belief? Can you? Is it even possible? Because you can't have a rational debate with somebody in that state, can you?
It's the other side of the coin of the fight or flight response. It's a response where no connection can be made, emotional or rational, right?
What if you dope them up first? You know, give them a give them a tab of acid and tell them that government is a religion.
Could give it a shot.
You know, I mean, what kind of? I guarantee you that the MK Ultra experiments have looked into this. You know, what kind of substances can you get people under where they start to question authority? You know.
Is it out there?
How many people smoke weed? You know, I mean, and because weed's illegal for the most part in the world, that means obviously the connection to having weed means you don't really care about the authority. Yeah, you disregard it, don't you?
Yeah.
So, is it the weed that makes you anti-authority, or is it your anti-authority that makes you go to the weed? Or is it column A and column B?
But I think back, you know, a couple of years back, I experimented with some LSD a lot, right? I took a lot of acid. That opened my mind up a lot, but I think here's the problem. Even if you were to take DMT, which will open that, that will point it out to you that government does not really exist, because very few things actually exist when you take something, that type of a psychedelic, right? But then it's like what you were saying. It's like, okay, you have that moment of inspiration, and then you get dropped right back in, and your religious programming, whatever you thought before, it's going to take over. It's going to go back in, and it's going to dominate. It's going to hush all that little burst, that little whisper of truth. It's going to say shh, and it's going to give you the things that you've been hardwired with from your parents, from your environment, from your school, from TV show, from everything you've been watching, from, you know, the girl you like, she's a statist. So, of course, you're going to believe what she believes in her parents. And that's what it is.
You know, while you're speaking there, I just can't. And I got one thought in my mind. How exactly do you get everybody unknowingly in the entire New Zealand Parliament to take a tab of acid at the same time? You know, just imagine the legislation that would be passed under urgency during that day. You know,
they won't pass legislation; they'll pass flagellation or something. There'll be no laws passed that day.
Well, it's the military did a experiment on soldiers with acid, and after 30 minutes, they were completely useless.
Yeah, you know? They won't kill anybody.
Well, it's not mm-mm. that they won't kill anybody. They couldn't get them to coordinate. They couldn't get them to march. They couldn't get them to really, really think or do exercises or anything like that. They're just sort of floating sort of thing. And You know, so that's the thing. If you ever are taking acid, whatever you need to do in order to enjoy your time while you're doing that, you need to get that finished within the first 30 minutes. Otherwise, it just ain't getting done.
I've seen what you mean, you know, and then they get the laughing attack and they're giving them orders and this guy's just laughing at nothing. It's,
yeah,
that's what it is.
Yeah, man.
You know,
see, it's always good to have a great laugh like that. And
yeah.
I think laughter is so, so healing. And that's why I think why comedians are so important. People don't pay them enough and they don't look at them as being important as, say, a newsreader or a film star or something of that nature. Some comedians are film stars, of course, but I think that taking yourself too seriously is a disease and comedians are the cure. This whole system that has been put in place by Jews and many other people is predicated upon the basic assumption that I'm very important and I have to take myself very seriously. Okay? I hate those people. You know? I can't help but not like them. Just because they're difficult to be around. They get upset about everything. They can't just chill. They can't just talk about something. It has to be at something, you know? There's no ability to weigh the costs of their own ignorance. They only have the capacity to weigh you down with it.
Yeah, weighing you down to hold up their false perceptions of themselves, you know? That's not real self-respect. That's not dignity. Real dignity is knowing that, you know, that maybe you're not, you know, the most important person in the world. That's not real dignity. To me, dignity is knowing that you're a flawed human being and you're just giving the other person the attention and there you go. That's all we need to do. Have a good laugh about it. Don't take their property and problem solved.
Yeah. I mean, me personally, I think that both I'm the most important person in the world and that I don't actually really matter that much. Okay, it's a strange juxtaposition to be in. I think I'm the most important because I'm the only person at the end of the day that I can really control. So that makes me most important to me. If I die or something like that, my part here is over. That's pretty important to me, I think. And also because there's so many other people, people who've got similar talents, similar brains, or similar views, or similar achievements, or whatever it is, because there's plenty of other people out there. The whole rationale of your life doesn't actually really matter unless it's put into contrast with other people. Have you done more than them? Have you done more than them? And then you get to wonder, is that all just ego as well? Because the real measure of your value in society is not how important you are. It's what you've actually done for other people. That's what's truly important at the end of the day. And it's only if you take yourself and realize your own importance that you will yourself to do these other very necessary tasks.
Yeah, when you put it that way, what's the most selfless thing you could do, right? Well, it really is. First, you have to be the best you. You are the most important in the world in the sense that, you know, there's work to be done. There's you have to help other people, but you have to focus on you first. If you really care about others, you better take care of you, right?
Yeah, like Vinny needs to take care of himself. Who's the most important person in the world that can do that? You see? And the same goes for all of us, I think, and we've neglect ourselves quite significantly in so many ways. There's mental, spiritual, physical ways that we deprive ourselves, punish ourselves, we tell ourselves we're not good enough or whatever, or we tell ourselves we'll do it later. And I think a lot of us are just wasting away. Meanwhile, Tony Robbins is making a killing because people are so, so sick of living in this downtrodden path of a life that they've got themselves into that they hear that Tony Robbins can freaking get them out of it. And so they give him some money and a few people get successful off of it because they've got the self-motivation and they really get it. And a whole bunch of other people, they buy the tapes and it just sits in their car unlistened to.
It's so, people making such a fortune, you know, telling them a little bit of truth, giving them a little bit of a snack and sending them off in a direction. But then to actually tell them the whole truth, the everything they need to actually come out of that, to come out of that doomy and gloomy life and actually live your true purpose. You know, some people have those answers, but what do they get? They get no thank you. They get the cold shoulder and you're off to try to tell someone else and they just don't listen. But these gurus, they tell them and their life is so comfortable, their family's so happy, you know, assumingly. just lying.
I mean, what is it about lies that can sometimes lead you to the truth, right? You just have to start questioning and start digging and you'll find the truth. And I think why I personally want to get the truth out, you know, sort of thing, is more of a personal thing because I don't like people not listening to me, right? When you're trying to tell somebody something, something important, and they don't listen or they don't care, that really rubs me the wrong way. And that's why I put people on the show so that I can listen to them and care about them to make them feel better, basically. And if they feel better, the audience feels better as well. They feel listened to. And that's just my little part. That's my little remedy for this madness and things of that nature. Everybody got different styles and whatnot. And I'm the guy who can talk about satanic pedophiles and how terrible it is. And no matter how terrible that is, my jokes are worse.
Wasn't expecting that one. You know what, Vinny? For me, it's all personal. It's always been personal. I don't really say that because I'm just starting out. I'll say that in 10 years, but it's all personal for me, this truth thing. I'm not anybody's, you know, really teacher or scholar. I'm just a guy that I'm so fed up with this bullshit. I'm not going to stop. I don't care. My coworker today, it's just like, I told him, I'm like, I'm not staying after. I don't care when the boss comes. I have a show with Vinny. I'm going to record. I'm doing this. And he's just like, you know, like, you don't earn any money from it. Like, why do you even do it? And that's what it's all about, right? It's like, they don't even understand why I do it. And I just thought about it in that moment. I'm just like, what is your life? I didn't say this to him, you know, because, you know, what is his life about? What are these people's lives about? You know, when we die, there's going to be like a thing. Apparently there's going to be a tunnel with a light at the end. And then you're going to flash. Your whole life is going to flash before your eyes in a second. If my whole life flashes before my eyes in a second, I'm going to feel really dumb for about 99% of it. I'm going to feel pretty stupid. And I know that moment is going to happen. I'm going to need to just be able to say, well, fuck, at least I tried a little bit, you know?
Right. The only thing you shouldn't do is nothing. All right. That's it. It's not that hard to not do nothing. All right. Even if there's a pencil that's out of place on your desk, put it back in place and you've actually done something for the day. People are too busy busting their own balls and questioning themselves and stuff like that. Oh, what if I don't do this right? What if the audio doesn't work? Or blah, 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 blah. It's just like, just freaking do it, man. Look, the world's coming to an end, all right? What excuse have you got not to do this? And let's say the point of somebody who works 5 days a week at a job they hate that doesn't inspire them creatively, that they have to get into traffic in order to go to and then get into traffic in order to get home from into a place that they don't like, that has to cost that are ever increasing and eating food that you don't really know is good for you or not. What is their purpose in life? You would say that it's the weekend, all right? Because because they've been weakened by the working week. And in their weekend state, they like to get inebriated with alcohol. This is where we get the term alcohol or spirits, which is used in demon possession. Okay, so basically, if you try and break it down, the average person exists to be an indentured servant that in order to feel good about their servitude to their dark masters, they allow themselves to become possessed by demons that their dark masters create because it makes you feel good.
And intoxicated, making yourself toxic, poisoning yourself with spirits.
Yeah, the toxic people are out there are plenty, aren't they? Right, it doesn't sound like that great a life when you put it like that, do you? Oh, man. You tell all these people and all these stories about this funny thing that guy did or whatever, and there's nothing terribly memorable about it, right? I mean, what do you earn while you're doing a show with me? Well, you may earn nothing. You may earn a couple of bucks in donations. Who knows? But what do you earn when you're sitting there getting pissed out of your head with a bunch of know-nothing morons who haven't changed their career in 35 years? Okay, what are you earning then? All right, other than cirrhosis of the liver. Bro. Nobody has a point to life until they make a point about it. All right, you got to stand for something. You got to just say, like, no, I'm not actually doing that tonight, bro. I've got something more important to do. Actually, sorry. Uh-huh. I know that you guys don't have a purpose in life. And I know that you're really depressed about it, and that's why you need to anesthetize yourself and poison your brain cells so that you can forget how much you freaking hate yourself and hate your life and hate the choices you make and continue to make on a daily basis. I understand. But that's not what I'm going to do.
And even they could change it, because just over 3 years ago, I was worse than that, dude. I was a hard drug addict, right? So I was that guy. And you know what I tell people? I tell people I'm still the same guy. I've just replaced my drug with the truth. And that's it. And this is the real thing. This is the real thing, guys. It's way better than LSD.
Yeah, mate. Just mainline a bit of that truth into your eyeballs. Inject a little bit of it into your veins,
and you're good to go. Yes, yes, that's a great message to leave the people with. But maybe, you know, maybe if you want to add some other words, I'm not saying you have to give a different message, but you know, let's wrap it up. I'm waking up to go to a job tomorrow that I actually do like. I'm one of the few, but people think it's a boring job. But you know, Vinny, thank you very much. Thank you to your to the people in the chat. You guys are awesome. And yeah, just whatever you want to say, you got the floor.
Okay. Whatever I got to say, I got the floor. You know why the Mexican pushed his wife off a cliff?
I've heard this one before. I don't.
Tequila.
Perfect.
I I had this idea that we are living in a holographic fractal projection of collective consciousness experiencing itself subjectively, and that in that field nothing can that exists in the three-dimensional realm can ever really truly be destroyed. You know, particles of wood become particles of smoke. Nothing could really ever be forgotten, and that everything is a smaller or larger version of something else. You know, a cell becomes a person, becomes a planet, becomes a galaxy, becomes a universe, you know. And in that, there's a whole bunch of other conscious beings that are working around, and there's these people called solipsists. They believe that the sun, the moon, the stars, and all the people they ever talk to are just figments of their imagination, of their subconscious just filling in the blanks, that they created all of this, as if their one consciousness is capable of doing that, and running all these billions of people's independent lives that they've never heard of or seen before, that they don't exist until they run into them or something. It's a crazy, crazy belief. And the actual structure of it is you've basically got five accessible human dimensions, right? First dimension's a dot. You can see a dot. Is second dimension's a line. Third dimension's a box. The fourth dimension's the box moving through time. And the fifth dimension is that box outside time, outside space. So that's where all your thoughts are all the time. And your job as a being with that kind of perception, that you can think about things that don't exist, is you've got to spend your time willing that stuff into the three-dimensional reality. Only there does it have any value. Only there can it be seen, smelled, tasted, or touched. And you may not benefit from these things that you create, but other people might. It might trigger other people's ideas, right? Somebody came up with a steam engine, then another guy came up with a car, then another guy came up with a rocket ship, and another guy came up with a Black Hawk helicopter. You know, it's all linked in to how we use these moments to channel our ideas and will them into reality. Your ideas do nobody any good by staying inside your head where they don't really exist. And they might not do you any good when you create them either. You might get deplatformed for it.
Arrested.
Yeah. Could get deplatformed, could get arrested. But who wants a comfortable life? A comfortable life is a boring life. Wouldn't you like your funeral to be full of like hundreds and thousands of people who all tell really strange and interesting and wonderful and inspiring stories? Right. Or would you like everybody to just say, oh, you're a good dude?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Safe is boring. Okay. Get some risk. Get some adventure. Make something up. Just freaking get it done. Nobody going to help you. You have to help you. I'd say that's probably enough for it as well. Donate at the VinnyEastwoodShow.com because that's Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question. And Eastwood, like, go ahead, make my news. And also my co-accused, Billy TK, probably go to riveroflies.co.nz and donate to him, you know, to say goodnight in Māori is Paul Marier. And that's why I like people to donate to Billy, because they don't want him to be a Paul Marier.
Yeah, Paul Marier, definitely donate to Billy, donate to Vinny. And I love that message about inside that fractal projection to create. And that's what architects do. They have a vision, they make the person understand the vision so that they can make something together. Not just for them, for others, but for them too. Because that's the most important person at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So.
The Greeks believe that you should plant a tree whose shade you know you shall never get to sit beneath.
There you go. Well, thank you, Vinny. Thank you for your time. Thank you for planting a tree today here with me. I'm really grateful. Thank you, everybody. And you're the best.
Thank you. I get that a lot.
Good night. Good night. Good night.
Cheers, brother.